Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. Starting that long slide down there to Pauhana Friday. And a lot of stuff to talk about today. Just as our usual beginning, we're going to start here with the Dow. It plunged, well, not plunged, it went down 121 points today. It's back in the 7,000s again. So all those so-called experts who a year ago were saying it's going to bottom in the 8,000s, well, obviously they were wrong. Wrong. Today's news is dominated, obviously, by Barack Obama's push for his new economic stimulus plan. It's now up around $900 billion, pushing a trillion. And if you were listening on the news break, there was the comment about it's not a stimulus bill, it's just a spending bill. Well, isn't that what the Republicans did last September, the Republican administration did? Was almost the same amount of money, and they were pushing it forward. Now, I want you to stop here and realize, forget about all the other bailouts, forget about all the money the Federal Reserve is loaning out, not telling you where it's going or what collateral is on it. $900 billion that Barack Obama wants to spend to stimulate the economy. It works out to about $3,000 plus accruing interest for every living American, young, old, man, woman, white, black, doesn't really matter. The reality is, of course, because little kids aren't paying taxes yet, and the retired are pretty much off the tax rolls as well, and the population of illegals and whatnot, that really the bulk of this bill is going to come down on the tax-paying Americans, which is actually a much smaller subset of the total population. So we're probably looking at somewhere around $5,000 to $7,000 per taxpayer. Just for this one bill, if it passes. Now, the thing to really worry about, earlier today, we saw Barack Obama getting up there and warning about a dire, do you hear, economic catastrophe if this bailout bill is not approved. Wow, man, deja vu, because I could swear we heard exactly the same thing last September, that the economy was going to collapse in 3 days if we didn't push through the bailout back then. $700 billion plus another $100 billion to make it, billion to make it all palatable to everybody. And it just, you know, they passed it with all these dire warnings, despite overwhelming opposition from the public, who realizes that they're going to have to make up that money. And as soon as they passed it, they changed what the money was for. Instead of buying all the toxic assets that were supposedly choking up the mortgage lending institution, they just started doing direct cash injection into these Wall Street financial firms, these banking firms, who promptly took the money and threw themselves one heck of a wild party. And then in October of last year, three senior economists working at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. These are guys that are on the inside. They know. They took the Federal Reserve's own data and concluded that the claims about a commercial credit seize-up and interbank lending were not true. Banks were still lending to consumers. We were still getting those little solicitations for credit cards in the mail. Bank lending was still going on. It had not ceased. And the banks were lending to each other at record levels. Yes, there was a sense of crisis, and the economy was showing signs of a strain. But this warning of a dire, imminent meltdown was a complete fabrication, as much of a hoax as Saddam's nuclear bombs. In fact, these Federal Reserve economists made that connection, saying that what these guys did, it was just like the run-up to the Iraq War. They're saying, we're experts, we're with the government, trust us. And they were either wrong or lying. I vote lying. So here today we have Barack Obama basically doing exactly the same thing. If we don't support his new bailout, dire catastrophe waits for us all. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm sorry, Barack, this is not change we can believe in, not when you're playing the same tired, hackneyed, worn-out hoax on us that your predecessor did only a few months ago. That's not change we can believe in. That's presidency, president two. And I am insulted that you think we, the American people, are so stupid that we're going to fall for it a second time when we didn't fall for it the first time. The calls to Congress during the passage of TARP were 9-1 against, and Congress went against the will of the people to pass this bill under this pretext that if they didn't defy the will of the people who and the voters who put them in there, that there was going to be this meltdown in the economy. And it was all a hoax. And here we are again. And here we are again. I think what it is last September, the Republican administration had their chance to loot the Treasury and hand it out to their Republican cronies. And now Barack Obama wants his turn. They're going to loot the Treasury for an approximately equal amount, $900 billion, and it's going to go out to Democratic cronies. When they're talking about these direct capital injections into all these banks, and Barack Obama's up there saying, well, we promise that those executives are not going to be allowed to make more than $500,000 a year off the taxpayers' backs. And if they're given greater compensation in stock, they can't cash it in until everything works out down the road. Well, you know, you're designing the system already with a loophole, and to be very honest, even $500,000, that's a pretty generous salary for somebody who's running a failed company, requiring a government bailout. Now, Barack Obama says that part of that money, part of that stimulus plan, is going to go into his public works projects. And I will be the first one to admit, our roads are in trouble. Our bridges are, well, we don't know how they are. The inspections have been deferred and put off. That's why we had that bridge collapse up in Minnesota. There was an inspection that said it's starting to fall apart, but subsequent inspections had kind of just sort of skipped over it. Our rail systems need work. Our infrastructure is really in terrible shape. Our flood control system is a joke. Absolute joke. But these public works projects are going to dead end the money, because once the money is spent for people to go out and fill in the potholes on the road, that's the end of it. We can't turn around and sell the product of their work to other countries to make money, to get money coming back in. And for every dollar that is yanked out of the public to go into this public works project is a dollar less that America's small businessmen can use to create a new job. So Barack Obama is out there saying that he's going to create 3 million new jobs with his public works program. But what he's not telling you is that in order to finance it, he's going to loot the private sector, which means he will destroy 3 million jobs in the process. This money for all this is not coming out of thin air. And you start diverting money from the private to the public sector for these glorious bailouts, you are strangling America's small businesses. And America's small businesses are responsible for 60% of new job creation and new product creation. And new products that we can sell to other countries is the only way we can dig our way out of this hole. Just moving the debt around so that we can stick the American taxpayer with it doesn't fix the economy. Makes things great for the CEOs and their pet politicians. They're making out like bandits, tons and tons of money. But it doesn't fix the nation. It doesn't fix the economy. It's just looting the people. So I think this is just more of the same. And I think Barack Obama's repeat of that ploy, the catastrophe awaits if we do not support his bailout plan. It's just a repeat of what we saw last September. And I don't think a new bailout is going to help the economy. And if anything, I think it's accelerating our decline, because it's taking the money from the working people, who are the foundation of the economy, and it's drizzling it over the top like cherries on an ice cream sundae. We're going to take a break here. If you want to call in, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is twiddling the dials and flogging the mutant hamster. Pick up the phone, punch the buttons, call in. Let's talk. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about Barack Obama. Second week on the job, it's already a hideous disappointment. His numbers are falling, and I'm not surprised. He's been an incredible disappointment for those people who supported him. And even for those of us who just sort of mildly favored him over Senator McCain. The latest fiasco, though, is his appointments to positions in his administration of people who they're less than caught up on their taxes. Let's put it delicately like that. And it's coming out today that Barack Obama had known these individuals had some tax issues, but he considered them minor and trivial and not likely to be an issue. And I think this underscores the degree to which Barack Obama, despite his early austere roots, he is really out of touch with ordinary Americans. Now, I suppose if you are used to making, you know, $1 million a year or something like that, having a paperwork snafu on your taxes for a few thousand dollars probably is a minor trivial issue. But the majority of us Americans aren't making $1 million or even $500,000 a year. Most of us are making, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And we're looking at that check, and now this is tax preparation season, makes it even worse. We're looking at those W-2s that we're getting in and realizing just how much of our lives are being sucked out of us by the government to pay for all this spending that is going to all these Wall Street financial institutions and these automaker corporations who are basically business failures. And they're being propped up on our backs, on our taxes. We're paying hideous amounts of taxes. We're not getting a lot back that we want. Everything the government wants to give us for our taxes is not something that we want. Like, listening to our phone calls and breaking into our computers and peeking through our windows. We don't want that, and we don't want to pay for that. What we wanted that money to go for was fixing the roads and fixing the bridges and fixing the rail lines. The reason all of that stuff has been neglected is because the government misappropriated the people's money to set up this little dictatorship where they can keep an eye on us and scan us and read us and scope us and wave us and radio beam us and whatever from a distance to make sure that we're not doing anything the government thinks we ought not to be doing. And they spent the money that should have gone for the roads and schools and hospitals and bridges to set up all this machinery to keep track of us and database us and put all of our particulars in a computer where it can be called up on terminals anywhere in the world. And half of it is erroneously entered data anyway. Total waste of money. And it's a total waste of our money. And we're struggling to pay our taxes. One out of every five households is in trouble with their taxes, according to J.K. Harris. And it's going to be worse this year. You've seen the commercials all over the TV set. Come on in, we'll help you get out of trouble with the Internal Revenue Service. You think they're just wasting money on those commercials? They know there's a market out there. They know most people are in serious trouble, trying to pay rising bills and rising taxes at the time when our government was giving tax incentives to corporations to send the high-paying jobs to other countries. We're caught between the rock and the hard place here. And so, yeah, the fact that the people who are going to be at the top of the government that is sucking all of that tax money out of us, for them to not be paying all of their fair taxes, depending upon what you think fair is, yeah, that's going to anger us. It's going to really annoy us. Now, I will be the first one to wade in and say that the tax code is incredibly complicated. And out of complication, it is possible for certain things to be missed and for mistakes to be made. If we had a fair and honest tax code, it would fit in a pamphlet. The reason the tax code is such a mess is that it is the accumulation of decades of special favors given by Congress to their wealthy donors. They'll go in and they'll say, a bill to provide tax relief for the manufacturers of popsicle sticks, because the popsicle stick maker was a heavy contributor in the previous campaign. And so they'll put a little thing in the tax code saying, if you are making popsicle sticks, you can declare your wood recycling and carbon credit and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they wrap it up in all kinds of legalese so it doesn't look like it's just a flat-out gift back to the donor, but that's exactly what it is. And the reason the tax code is the rat's nest maze that it is because it is nothing from beginning to end but special favors to special interests so that they can shift the flow of cash just a little bit more in their direction. And this is how the favors of royalty are handed out. In the old days, you did something for the king, they would give you a little plot of land, or they'd give you some money, or they'd give you a ring or something like that. These days, you do a favor for the rulers, because it's got to be a little bit more covert, because we're supposed to be a republic or a democratic republic. We're supposed to have, you know, sort of a fair and legal and honest government, but we don't. And the way the favors are handed out is Party A does a favor for the politician, and the politician goes to Washington and changes the tax code so that a little more money flows back to the donor. And that's why it's all a huge mess. Along, of course, with the issue that nobody seems able to actually find a law passed by Congress, signed by the president, and blessed by the U.S. Supreme Court that obligates working people to pay a tax on wages and salary, which is an exchange for their labor. It's not an income. It's not a profit. They are exchanging their labor for that money. And nobody can find a law that says that actually is supposed to be taxed. And I don't even want to start about the 16th Amendment. That one's a hopeless mess. For 10 years, we've been trying to get the government to show us the bills of ratification from the necessary number of states, and all they do is sit there with their arms crossed and say, how dare you refuse to believe us? Yeah, after Saddam's nuclear bombs, I do refuse to believe you. If the government told me it was going to be a sunny day, I would feel morally obligated to take a raincoat out with me. So there we are, and Obama didn't think it was going to be a big deal, and it is a big deal. And the fact that Obama missed that one basically tells us he really is out of touch with how hard life has gotten out here in flyover country. He really is that out of touch if he thought that that was not going to be a problem. Anyway, turning back to California, as you know, they are functionally broke. They are sending out IOUs in lieu of checks for these various payments, welfare payments, payments on student grants, various other entitlement programs, so forth and so on. The pension funds in California are hovering on the edge of bankruptcy. Now, the conventional wisdom is that California is the bellwether for the rest of the country. As California goes today, the rest of the country will be doing next year. I think that's a valid observation, and I think what we're seeing happening in California today is going to be happening pretty much across the country. And the bottom line is, everything the government is doing to try, under the claim of fixing the economy, is actually going to make things worse. We're going to take another break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And last week, in the aftermath of Israel's aggression against the Gazan people, the British Broadcasting Corporation refused to air a charity fundraising appeal for the victims of this war. Now, BBC had aired similar fundraising appeals from the same group for the victims of other aggressions around the world, Kosovo, Darfur, places like that. But in this case, they refused to air a fundraising for the people of Gaza, claiming that it would damage their reputation for impartiality, that somehow showing the plight of these non-combatants in Gaza was going to be prejudicial against Israel. And the BBC was struggling real hard to maintain its sense of impartiality. Well, today, the BBC has given us another example of their impartiality. I am not kidding you. This story is Dateline today, the 4th of February, 2009. The headline is, Nazi Camp Doctor Died in 1992. Okay, just think about this for a minute. Nazi camp doctor died in 1992. This is a guy who, whatever crimes he may or may not have committed, took place in the first half of the last century. And he's been dead for 17 years. And the BBC just decided they're going to report it today. I'm sorry. World War II is not news. And neither is a guy who died 17 years ago. But BBC decided to run this today and give it a lot of play because one more time we can wave the Holocaust in everybody's face with this story about an accused Nazi camp doctor, who they called him Dr. Death. And whatever he was supposed to have done was done in the first half of the last century, and he's been dead for 17 years, and BBC considers this to be impartial news. Talk about propaganda. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Susan in Arizona. Aloha, Susan. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Mike, I just wanted to point out the article that you ran about Father Dubois. I think that's the way to pronounce
yes.
it. He wrote Holocaust by Bullets. There were some
yes.
things that I found incredibly inconsistent.
A lot of people have said exactly the same thing. I've gotten a lot of email about it.
Okay, because I just tuned in. But the girl crushing the bodies with her bare feet in Kyiv.
Yes.
I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Kiev?
Kiev.
But that would be, like, a very cold place. So, and she says
yes.
because they didn't have shoes. So what did they do during the winter?
Yeah, it is a fantastical story. And, you know, if you just listen to it and, oh, shock and horror and just these very powerful images that it summons up, and it's a very effective story. But when you start to take it apart and think about it quite seriously, you know, does it really, you know, first of all, you know, why is she stomping on them and, you know, in bare feet? And is that really the most effective means to do whatever it is they're trying to do there? And you start to pull it apart like that. And I've gotten a lot of email from people saying that this just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't sound believable. And, of course, at this point, if you look at the timing of the story, when it comes out just exactly when Israel is struggling, they've openly advertised. They're mounting a huge public relations campaign to recover their image as the world's permanent victim after dropping white phosphorus all over the kids in Gaza. And so this story shows up exactly when they need it. We've had the quite predictable vandalization of a synagogue down in Venezuela. It's got spray painted.
Which is another one of our targets.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a very obvious bias in the media, and yes, BBC is guilty of this as well, because you get spray paint on a synagogue in Venezuela, and it's global headlines. And yet Israel bombed six mosques in Gaza, and nobody noticed.
I do think that Muslims noticed.
Well, yeah, they did, but I'm saying here over, you know, in the Western media and everything, it's like no big deal when Israel blows up churches and schools.
Because Muslims are the devil, aren't they?
Well, something like that.
That's the way we're trained to think.
Yeah, and we're trained to think that if somebody puts spray paint on a synagogue, it's the end of the known universe.
Yeah, well, you know, you obviously have often covered false flag attacks. So, and Mike, have you commented on Dick Cheney's predicting a new catastrophic terrorist attack?
Well, I haven't. I talked about it today, but we did talk about it on Saturday's show. And of course, there used to be a tradition where the outgoing administration would refrain from commenting about the incoming administration for 1 year. It was sort of a grace period. But Dick Cheney is out there, and he's pushing new impending attack and so forth and so on. And, you know, it almost stands to reason they've got to pull some kind of a false flag if they're going to invade Iran, because they're not getting any traction any other way.
Well, the irony is that he predicted the September 11th attacks with the projects of New American Century almost 1 year exactly before they happened, with Doug mm-hmm. Zakheim and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith and Donald Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's predicting something. So whenever Dick Cheney predicts something, it means it's going to happen, because he's probably behind it.
Well, he's definitely in the loop of those who are behind it, but we've also got Netanyahu insisting that al-Qaeda is going to blow up the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And, you know, of course, that would be an act that would absolutely alienate any and all Christian support for the Muslim point of view in the world, which is why al-Qaeda, any real Muslim terrorists, are not going to do it. Of course, we know al-Qaeda is a front for Mossad and CIA. But the question, anytime one of these people come out and they say, we're going to have this horrible thing happen, the first question would be, how is it that you know enough about these people where you know what they're going to do, but you can't go out and arrest them? And so, I mean, just thinking about that part of it, and you know, they're obviously lying. They can't know what these people are going to be doing and not know where to go pick them up and arrest them. It just doesn't make
any
sense.
They make us feel like criminals when we're in the airport.
Yes.
And they can't find these people who are using these satellite phones. They can find any of us. Anyone who has a phone, they can find us via GPS.
Yeah, absolutely they can. And, you know, the fact is that our entire infrastructure is wired with locating and listening devices, not only by the U.S. government, but by Israel. And so, yeah, they can find anybody that they really want to. It's all made up stuff. It's all made up stuff. It's wag the dog. We're having our dog wagged to this again.
Well, it's going
to okay, be okay, and, okay, Susan, anything else? Otherwise, we've got another caller waiting.
No, I'm just saying, if Cheney says it's going to be catastrophic, that means that he wasn't satisfied with September 11th, so this one really probably will, like, kill more than 3,000 people. And you can see
that would actually make sense. That would make sense because, you know, we're now used to having buildings knocked down, so the next false flag, and it's going to be the last one they can get away with if they get away with it, so it's going to have to be really big. If I were wargaming it, I would say biological release in multiple cities at the same time so that the threat of terror is, like, immediate. Could be in the air. You could be breathing it now and not knowing it, just maximizing that sense of terror to get us all kill crazy and ready to go kill brown people all around the rest of the world. So, yeah, if they do another...
Susan,
my show, let me finish. If they do another false flag, it's going to have to be something really, really ugly to get us motivated to go into another war, what with public trust of the government at an all-time low. Now it's your turn.
No, I was just going to say that Silverstein, who was running the WTC complex, had a weekly conversation with Netanyahu, according to Haaretz, which is an Israeli paper, and that was confirmed. And the second thing is that Netanyahu predicted the attack about 6 years before the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. Uh-huh. So, like, the evidence just keeps adding up and adding up. And what I find so staggering is that, like, the so-called mainstream media and most Americans, when you bring this up, just call you a conspiracy theorist. But the circumstantial evidence is all there.
Oh, it definitely is. We have to let you go, Susan. The music means it's time to do some commercial breaks and pay some bills around here. So thanks a lot, and please call in again. We're going to take another break. When we come back from these commercials, we're going to go with Mike in Texas and find out what's on his mind. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network. You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. We're going to go right to the phones. Mike in Texas. Aloha, Mike. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Mike. I wanted to talk a little bit about the term anti-Semitism mm-hmm. as it relates to the state of Israel and to America and to the body of Christ. And, I'm just, I'm just really, as a Christian, just about to the end of my wire about this, because I'm really just seeing so much anti-Christian policy coming out of the state of Israel and emanating from the Zionist community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I studied some history on it when the European interest came in and invaded Palestine to create the state of Israel, that there were more than 250,000 Christians living in and around Jerusalem in the area which is now the state of Israel. And many Christian churches were burned and destroyed by the invaders. And now we have just a smattering of Christians left in Israel and in the Palestinian-controlled areas. My understanding is that the leadership of Hamas is, or the president, if that's the proper term, is a Christian.
Yes.
And, you know, so I decided as a Christian to contact our embassy over there in Israel and to contact a touring agency about proselytizing for Christ in the streets of Jerusalem in Israel.
And oh, boy. Yeah. I know where this is going. Please continue.
Exactly. And so I said, I'm just a Christian. I want to bring a few friends over to Israel and proselytize for Jesus Christ to the Jewish people in Israel. The attorneys in our American embassy there said that I would likely be attacked, I could be killed or jailed for proselytizing for Jesus Christ in the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And a similar sentiment was given to me by the tourist group, and what they told me was, you better go on a controlled tour with a Christian group, as opposed to just coming over as an individual and walking the streets, proselytizing for Christ. And so I would like to include, you know, whenever conversation is being talked about Israel and all this anti-Semitism, it seems like this word is just pounded and pounded into our ears. And we need to be talking about the anti-Christian efforts and activities of the state of Israel. There's more anti-Christian, so to speak, going on than anti-Semitism, I believe, in the world out there. It's happening in our media. It's happening in our entertainment.
Yes.
It's and then you look at who are the owners of these media conglomerates. What is their religious faith?
Mm-hmm.
So as a Christian, I want to stand up for the red words in the Bible, for the New Testament, for the New Covenant, that the old covenant was laid to rest by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. As a Christian, I'm speaking. And we need to be talking about the anti-Christian activities of the state of Israel. And I was just...
Well, you hit a very good point. I want to come in here with a couple of comments about that. You've hit a very good point. The word anti-Semitism is held around. It's basically, it's a shield from criticism. And the reason I object to that word and that phrase, first of all, the Palestinians are also Semites. The Arabs are Semites. They're all going back to the tribe of Shem, and it was that little domestic soap opera between Abraham and Sarah and Hagar that split the Semitic race into Jewish and Arab. But they're all Semites. So when you say anti-Semitism, that also has to include hostility and resentment toward the Arabic people as well. So that's the first point of confusion. But the other reason is that every time you criticize Israel and they say you're being an anti-Semite, the first thing I think about, well, if I were to criticize Adolf Hitler, we're not going to see people stand up and say, oh, you're only criticizing him because you hate the German people. You know, you're anti-Aryan. That's your problem. And it's a way, you know, it would be silly for somebody to do that. And yet, in this other context, they get away with it. And it's just a means of avoiding actually having to deal with the criticisms involved, like dropping white phosphorus all over small kids in Gaza. And, yeah, absolutely. I don't think this is an issue. Anti-Semitism is if we hate people because they're Jewish or Arab Okay? And that's not what's going on at all. We criticize Israel because of what Israel is doing. They are behaving badly. They are behaving barbarically. And, you know, they're not showing a trace of moral compunction about it all. They are, in fact, behaving just as badly toward the Palestinians as Adolf Hitler behaved toward the Jews in the last century. And the fact that it happened back then doesn't really excuse allowing it to happen again here today. Now, you and I, we can't do a thing about what happened in the first half of the last century. We weren't alive when all of that was going down. But we are alive right now. We're alive here and now today, and there are hideous crimes taking place today that we can and should and must address and oppose. And so this, I think the good news is that Israel has hurled anti-Semite around so much, it's lost its sting. They've worn it out. It's no longer a great sword to defend Israel. It's been worn down to a letter opener, and nobody cares anymore.
And what we have to realize is that the state of Israel has very little regard for Christians. And
they have very little regard for anybody who's not of their faith. I mean, whether it's, you know, and this is something a lot of people don't realize. There are, or at least were, Christians still living in Gaza. And they were catching the bullets and the flechettes and the white phosphorus just as readily as the Muslims were.
That's correct. And we as Christians, we need to stop being duped by this. And if we can bring into the context of the conversation the anti-Christian activities that are going on by the state of Israel, I think it'll bring some balance to the debate.
Well, I think it's a very good thing, because one of the most dangerous phenomena we've seen in the United States are the so-called Christian Zionists, who are Christian and profess the Christian values, and yet they blindly support Israel because they're caught up in this whole end times forecast where, you know, if we can start Armageddon all over again, Jesus is going to come back down, there's going to be a really big party, and so forth and so on. And we need to break that alignment, because I think if the Christian Zionists, you've got it absolutely correct, if the Christian Zionists saw how Christians are being treated in Jerusalem, in Israel, I think
right.
they would be absolutely appalled.
Right. And, you know, Jesus said that there will be masses of the body of Christ who will be deceived. And so he himself spoke to this, saying that you've got to turn away from the deception. And that's what the body of Christ is falling prey to at this time.
Well, you've got some really good insights in the context of your faith, and I think you're doing the right thing by speaking out, because that is really the only way that other people are going to become aware of your situation. So we're running out of time, Mike. I got to let you go here, but thank you very much for the phone call, and please call in again. So that was Mike from Texas with some interesting insights from the point of view of Israel's treatment of Christians vis-a-vis the, some would say, almost blind support some segments of Christianity in the United States continue to offer Israel, even as, you know, look at all the Ten Commandments that are being violated. You know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's property, and Israel wants Gaza and the West Bank. Thou shalt not bear false witness, Israel lying about who broke the ceasefire. Thou shalt not steal, stealing the Palestinians' homes. Thou shalt not kill. Well, you've seen the videos. You know about all that stuff. Anyway, we're almost out of time. I wanted to cover this one other story. It's up at Prison Planet TV. It's also on whatreallyhappened.com, a video of a police officer punching a woman in the face four times during an arrest. She was restrained. They wanted to ticket her for riding a bicycle on the sidewalk. Ooh, horrors, crime, end of the world here. The cop sprays himself in the face with his pepper spray, and then it just gets out of hand. You got to watch this video. You don't think we're living in a police state? This is it. We'll be back tomorrow with more news, your phone calls, all kinds of new crazy stuff, Thursday Night Follies. Until then, Aloha America.